Campsite Media. It's 2004, and Lindsay Lohan walks out onto a stage in a little black dress and gold heels.
I'm hosting Saturday Night Live. I'm only 17, so this is insane.
She's already reached a milestone that so many actors dream of. She's hosting Saturday Night Live.
Anyway, you might know me as the girl from Freaky Friday or as the two girls from The Parent Trap when I was little.
In her big breakout role, she played twins. One was American and one was British. The movie's called The Parent Trap.
Why is everyone staring?
Don't you see it?
See what?
The resemblance between us.
Resemblance? Between you and me?
The Parent Trap was actually a good movie. I mean, Nancy Myers directed it, and Natasha Richardson and Dennis Quaid played her parents. And Lindsay Lohan went on to get so many more great roles, opposite other great actors. Like Freaky Friday, that body swap comedy with Jamie Lee Curtis as Lindsay's mom.
What have you done to my
ear? Mom, it's an earring.
Take it out. Take it out right now.
No, it looks cool.
Oh, don't start with me. And those clothes are going back first thing tomorrow.
Of course, Lindsay also starred in the now cult classic film, Mean Girls.
The weird thing about hanging out with Regina was that I could hate her, and at the same time, I still wanted her to like me.
Later, she acted in a film that absolutely no one remembers, A Prairie Home Companion. But at least her mom was played by Meryl Streep. So back in 2004, when Lindsay hosted SNL for the first time, it seemed like the beginning of her ascent. And she went on to host SNL three more times. But the most recent time she hosted, in 2012, her monologue was very, very different.
I feel lucky and grateful to be here tonight, and that's why I really want to thank all of my friends at SNL who trusted me enough to have me back. You know, this studio feels like a home to me. Wait, so the alarm goes off if I leave the stage? I thought it was only if I left the studio. And I thought you guys trusted me.
The joke, of course, was that by then, Lindsay had been in and out of court, jail, rehab, and community service at, I'm not even kidding, a morgue in L.A.
Next week, she'll begin serving her sentence as a janitor in the Los Angeles County Morgue.
I'm grateful that, you know, I've learned from it. It's helped me.
At just 25 years old, she's attempting a comeback.
But from this time, Lindsay's once promising career has also had one foot in the grave. Although she has definitely gotten better, and she's booked some Netflix rom-coms. The first one's called Falling for Christmas, and she gets engaged in it.
Sierra Belmont, will you marry me?
Oh, Tad!
Let's make it official, shall we? Our first social media post as an engaged couple.
A new movie's about to come out with Lindsay, too. It's called Irish Wish.
What brings you to Ireland?
A wedding.
Oh, congratulations.
Oh, no, it's not mine. It's my friend's.
So, as fans of Lindsay's, which we are, should we be happy with where she is now? Or has something gone wrong that can't be fixed? Does she have a shot at a real comeback?
From Campsite Media and Sony Music Entertainment, this is Infamous. I'm Natalie Robomet.
And I'm Vanessa Gregoriadis. This week, we're talking about the fall of Lindsay Lohan and her struggle to repair her image, plus reestablish herself as a serious actor.
As a kid and a teenager, Lindsay Lohan was this amazing, impressive talent with so much potential.
Everywhere you look, Lindsay Lohan is right there. She's on the cover of the magazines.
One of our staff went out and bought all the teen magazines right. That he could find in a very extensive newsstand, and he was trying to find a magazine that didn't have an article on Lindsay Lohan. Couldn't do it.
Tina Fey said Lindsay had a really quick-to-memorize spongy mind.
Right, and Meryl Streep said that she was almost preternaturally alive on camera, which is pretty much the highest compliment you can get as an actor.
Right. But like a lot of child actors, things sort of went haywire in her 20s. She partied too much, shopped too much, drank too much, and did a lot of drugs.
And then I read that you said that you really hadn't done cocaine but 3 or 4 times.
I really hadn't done it. I really haven't done it more than 10 to 15 times.
Yeah, so she's trying to minimize it there, but there was clearly a problem.
And all this partying was happening in the early aughts, and it was happening with people like Paris Hilton and Britney Spears, who also had their share of rough nights, bad decisions, embarrassing paparazzi pics, and very, very public falls from grace.
That is for sure. But if Britney and Paris haven't exactly managed to restore their former glory, they at least have been able to launder their reputations and reemerge as beloved women.
Totally. And Lindsay Lohan seems to have been trying to do that too. But why hasn't she quite managed it yet? That's what we're going to try to figure out today.
Right. And to shed some light on this question, I talked with Evgenia Peretz, who did a big story on Lindsay Lohan and spent quite a bit of time with her just as things were starting to go awry in Lindsay's life. So, Evgenia, wonderful writer and friend, so nice to talk to you.
Thank you for having me.
So you wrote this very long and very memorable profile of Lindsay Lohan in Vanity Fair. What point in Lindsay's life was this?
So this was in 2006, and she was just coming off of being red hot in the tabloids, you know, alongside Paris Hilton and Nicole Richie, and being stalked by the paparazzi and looking really skinny and sort of a strange orange hue. And she was inviting a lot of speculation about her life and her partying and that kind of thing. And so when we met, that was the narrative. And she was super frank with me. And I was just like enamored with her right off the bat. I thought she was so fun. I thought she was so warm. She hugged me hello. And I was like, ooh, she smells nice. And her skin is really soft. And, you know, she was just very enchanting, bubbly, frank, kind of mischievous person.
So, where did you meet her?
Okay, the first time we met, it was at the Chateau Marmont. And she was actually living there because she was getting her apartment renovated or something. And everyone who worked there adored her. And she reminded me of Eloise at the Plaza.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And she just owned the place and was very chatty with all the staff and knew all the rooms and just sort of made it her home. It was kind of sweet.
So she was an elfin presence, sort of.
Yes.
Scurrying about this hotel that we all loved back then, which is, in retrospect, was like a little bit of a shabby hotel, but okay.
Yeah. No, it was very of the moment.
And she's like 19 years old at this point, right? So she's done Mean Girls. She's done The Parent Trap. She's, I guess, on her press tour for Herbie the Car movie that is like things started to go wrong, right?
Yes, that's when things started really going downhill and she didn't show up on the set and people were really worried. So I guess Herbie was like at the low point. So this was after Herbie, but Lindsay's in the tabloids all the time. And I feel like the tabloids were still such a big thing at that point. Watching these young girls in LA like race around and get into trouble and go to dumb nightclubs, and she was totally at the center of that. It was a mess, but I do remember the paparazzi. This was another visit I had with her. This was in Manhattan, and she was shooting a video for a song she had written, and there was tons of paparazzi staked outside her trailer, unsavory character. And she was hounded by them constantly, but also like had a sort of breezy relationship with them because she's a charming person, even though she was obviously really troubled and complicated. She just had this like unbelievable charisma and kind of emotional intelligence. But yeah, it's interesting if you look back at Mean Girls, and she seemed to be absolutely the rising star.
It's fascinating because the time that you talked to her, it seemed like it didn't have to go this way. Did you feel that she still had career potential?
I did. I mean, I don't know really what happened. You know, her mother obviously had an outsized role in her career. And Dina is like this brassy Long Island woman who was like a former Rockette. And she was married to Lindsay's father, who was like super volatile and in and out of jail. And you got the feeling that Lindsay's career was like the most exciting thing that had ever happened to Dina. Mm-hmm. And Lindsay was way more honest and frank about what she'd gone through. And she was very refreshing in that way. But like Dina was like, just wanted to shut that all down. And Dina was like so exasperated with me and the questions I was asking. And I remember at some point I was asking about what Lindsay had told me about like her very troubled period and, you know, partying all the time. And she was like, isn't that what you do when you're 18? You go out partying? And I was like, okay, this woman's not that intelligent. No.
Yeah.
A lot of people go to college, you know, but that was like the world she was coming from. Maybe Dina just was too big an influence in her life. Who knows?
I mean, it is really shocking because you basically, you know, you have Lindsay sort of opening up to you, right? You're sitting at the chateau, you go multiple places with her, but she's saying things like, I was sick and everyone was scared. I had people sit me down and say, you're going to die if you don't take care of yourself. She talks about having an intervention where Amy Poehler and Lorne Michaels, after she was on SNL, say, we've seen John Belushi and other people who are really talented have drug problems and die, you know, and we're worried about you. And she's telling you about this. And then her mother is trying to tell you that you're like a nervous Nelly, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think if Lindsay had really taken to heart what people like Tina Fey and Amy Poehler were saying, maybe it could have turned out differently.
What role do you think her father played in this? I mean, I had almost forgotten that he had such a violent past and that she, of course, had written pop songs about him. And you even went to the filming of a video that was about her life with her father.
Her dad was in and out of jail for assault, driving under the influence, violating restraining orders. Lindsay told me that he had kidnapped her from the courthouse when he was in some kind of proceeding with Dina. And he was just a very scary presence in their life. She told me about some story where he was sort of stalking the family and he came into the house and she was in the bathroom and he was hiding behind the shower curtain and jumped out at her. So she had this like legitimately traumatic family life. She wrote this song about him that was very dramatic. I seem to remember her like in a gown with running mascara in a room that was supposed to be her childhood bedroom. And she's screaming like, daughter to father, daughter to father. It was like this extremely emotional video. At the time, I think Tommy Mottola, I got like a email quote from him. He was like, that's one of the greatest pop songs I've ever heard. Not quite, but.
So you don't think she could have made it as a pop star?
She was dabbling in that. I'd like completely forgotten that she was trying to do that for a hot minute.
And so what about her publicist? This publicist I have certainly had my run-ins with as well.
So she's been around forever, representing tons of A-list celebrities. Mm-hmm. And I understand why she was sort of like hovering and worried because, like, Lindsay didn't have the greatest reputation. And then at some point after one of our interviews, I think she called me. In the interview, Lindsay had told me about her partying and drug use. And Leslie called me and was like, you got to take that out. You got to take that out. Mm. And I was like, why? She talked about it. And she was like, well, I don't know how I'm going to spin it. So, you know, that's not really my problem. But then it got really weird. So I would say we got on very, very well. And Lindsay mm-hmm. was kind of in a confessional mode. And she told me about how she had lost all this weight and how she was making herself sick. And she was talking very frankly about an eating disorder. So that's what I wrote about. And of course, I tape recorded the conversation because that's what you do. And I remember the piece came out and I initially got an email that was like, we love it. It's great. And then 2 days later, it was a total about face. And it was, Lindsay never had an eating disorder. This is a lie. This never happened. And I was just like, well, she talked about it. It's on tape. And that kind of shut her up. But it was one of those things where it's like, they're meeting behind the scenes and like, oh, this actually isn't so great. And Lindsay's going to come across poorly. But I thought, just leave it alone. I think she comes across very well and very honest. But I have a feeling it made it into some tabloid that they were not happy about it.
I mean, it's interesting because you can see from a publicist perspective, it's like, okay, well, everybody knows she's out, she's drinking, she's doing drugs. We don't want to put on the top of that, oh my God, she's also bulimic, right?
Yeah.
But when you're dealing with somebody who is both very open and also has these genuine problems and is this age, it's sort of like the bed has been made, right? Like, you can't tell somebody like that, don't confess anything. She's shooting a video about her father being violent. You know?
Exactly. And I almost think like that kind of thing wouldn't happen today because I feel mm-hmm. like celebrities are much more frank about all of their struggles, their mental health struggles, all sorts of things. And it's almost like part of their narrative and selling point and how they're connecting to people. But I think there was this inclination at that time to still be like, oh, we're still going to put out these shiny, perfect images of our stars. And it just strikes me as so silly. A few years after this whole thing, I was on my way back from LA and it was a work trip. And that's why I was flying business. I feel like I need to explain that. And in the seat in front of me was Lindsay Lohan. And I was like, oh my God, is she going to recognize me? Like, does she hate me? Does she like me? And I just sort of like tried to hide. And there was this guy next to her who looked sort of drunk, shabby, and wearing like really tacky, weird clothing, longish hair and sort of weathered skin in his 60s or something. Anyway, he was sitting right next to her. And we land at JFK in the morning. It was a red eye. Mm-hmm. And we all get up. And he turns to her and he's like, hey, Lindsay, it's Eddie Money. Tell your mom that Eddie Money says hi. And it was just like, oh, it was just kind of sad. It was like Dina and Eddie Money.
Eddie Money, if you don't know, wasn't just some guy from Long Island. He was actually a pretty big singer in the 70s and 80s, and also pretty cheesy even back then. Anyway, when Evgenia met with Lindsay, things were about to take a turn for the worse in her life. She would struggle with addiction, damage to her career, and end up in a revolving door between jail and rehab for years.
This is Infamous from Campside Media.
So, as Lindsay was going through serious issues in her personal life, Her career obviously suffered. First, she ditched the press tour for her 2006 movie, Herbie Fully Loaded, a Disney film about a magical car. You might think that was no big deal, but promotion is included in actors' contracts, so this was a serious no-no. While filming 2007's Georgia Rule, she repeatedly showed up late to set, if she showed up at all. The director even sent her a note calling her out for her behavior, and that note was leaked to the press. Lindsay began to earn a reputation for being difficult to work with. Her unreliability also made the production she was in difficult to ensure, which was a big problem for producers. The roles pretty much dried up.
I just want to say that at the same time all of this was going on, every writer in New York was getting a call to ghostwrite a Lindsay Lohan biography, including me. But she wouldn't show up to the meetings and eventually would just fizzle out. In Los Angeles, the paparazzi were constantly following Lindsay around, covering her every move. Jill Eshganian has been a celebrity photographer for years, and she covered Lindsay back in the day.
She's in a Mercedes. She's driving fast. You know, she's partying at night. And I mean, at the time, I think she was like 18 or 19. That gold rush of stars are just like us. A picture of Lindsay pumping gas could make, you know, $5,000-$10,000. I have one funny story about Lindsay. And, you know, all those girls, they wanted free stuff from designers and all that stuff like that. And at Kitson, you know, the different people who had like Seven for All Mankind and True Religion and all this stuff, they wanted their clothes on these It girls. Please, can you get this? Give it to Lindsay. Give it to Brittany. Give it to Jessica. Give it to Paris. Give it to whatever. So Lindsay was in there one day, and I, you know, the other and I were there, and she says, well, you know, they, you know, Lindsay, you know, these different designers want you to wear their stuff. She says, well, I'll wear it. And he goes, but you need to be photographed leaving. And she says, okay. And so the paparazzi were kind of gathering outside, and she put on this whole outfit and a cute little hat, and she looked out the window. She goes, well, there's not enough paparazzi here. I'll wait till there's more. I remember thinking that was so freaking funny.
But Jill remembers something allegedly happening with her dad, Michael Lohan, that wasn't quite as funny.
Us Weekly sent a reporter because her dad was going to give us information, Michael Lohan. So we sent a reporter. He ended up sleeping with our reporter. And then I think her parents were divorced at that time. And I just pictured that this girl, I mean, that the whole parents and the crazy broken up parents and the dysfunction that was going on in her life, and she survived.
So as Lindsay struggled, she began to reach for iconic women to emulate. Women who had also lived in the spotlight and suffered from addiction problems, like Marilyn Monroe and Elizabeth Taylor. She did a photo shoot recreating Marilyn Monroe's final photo shoot before her death of an overdose, which is pretty dark. And then she played Elizabeth Taylor in a Lifetime biopic.
I was lucky enough because I do relate to Elizabeth Taylor in a lot of ways.
Yeah, and there are a lot of parallels between the two of you, from being a child actor to your intense public scrutiny.
Lindsay was going through real difficult problems with addiction and family drama. I spoke with Brennan Kilbane, a journalist who met Lindsay last year for a big profile in Allure magazine. So let's go back to those kind of dark days of sort of the 2010s. Can you kind of describe what was going on with Lindsay in terms of the court, the rehab, all, you know, the jail community service stuff? Can you just like paint a little picture of that dark time?
Yeah. Well, her publicity team was very adamant going into our interview that the past was not to be discussed.
Oh, interesting.
Yes. Which is, of course, not unusual. You know, I think nowadays we get a lot of intervention from the publicist, and I think that magazines have less bargaining power than they used to. It's felt like lately we have been recontextualizing the way we treated people like Lindsay, who were kind of coming up in the public eye, who were basically children. So I really wanted to talk about that. And of course, as soon as I brought it up, you know, it was an immediate shutdown from the publicist. But I would say that, you know, in the opening of the 2010s, the troubled image of Lindsay Lohan sort of lives in our mind, right? Like, she's not mm-hmm. working as much as she used to be. She's this working actress again, but then her run would be cut short for some reason. And, you know, you kind of get the sense that something is going on. And I really think about 2014 as being kind of turning point, because it's when she left America to move to London. And it's also when her interviews with Oprah came out.
As you were talking about going back, you know, the six times that you've been to rehab and all of the dysfunction around you and chaos, do you think you are or were addicted to chaos?
I think so. Yeah. Really? It was a comfortable chaos for me.
We now think of these Oprah moments as being these kind of vindicating moments for young, troubled starlets, but that was not, you know, the case for Lindsay.
So 2014, I feel like she's kind of finally free of all these troubles. And as you said, she moves to London, and that feels like a turning point. Can
yes.
you tell me a bit of what her life in London was like? Like, what was she there to do?
The main reason she was in London was the David Mamet play, Speed the Plow. It was a West End play that she was cast in. There were good reviews and there were not so good reviews. I know that there were some issues with forgetting lines. And this is Lindsay, like, people are not going to give her the benefit of anything. You know, people are waiting to tear her down as they always have. So 2014, she was doing all of these interviews in London. She moves to London. She's like, I love it here. I can go for a run in the park and no one bothers me. But, you know, the British press is still ruthless, and she's being picked apart constantly. Mm-hmm. And then by the end of the year, it seemed like that was the right time for her to go.
After Lindsay left London, she started spending a lot of time in Greece. She opened a club in Athens in 2016, and then a beach club in Mykonos that became the center of an MTV reality show called Lindsay Lohan's Beach Club.
I'm Lindsay Lohan. I live my life in the public eye. People judge me every second. It's so easy to just keep going, 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 going. But sometimes you have to stop.
Guys!
Or I disappear. Now, I want to do things differently. I want to be my own boss.
This was yet another time that Lindsay was going to start over. This time, it would finally stick. This would be her comeback as an entrepreneur, a girl boss.
By her telling, this was a beach where she visited with this man she was dating, and he was not good to her. She has accused him publicly of abuse, and one of these instances was on this beach. They got into an altercation, and he hit her. And so she, on the show, talks about how it was that beach that Lohan Beach Club was opened up on, and she said that the humiliation and the shame of that moment, she looked around and she was like, I want to own this beach one day. And so that's kind of what she did with the club. And she kind of joked about that with me. You know, everyone saw her going out to clubs, so why not open her own? But I think the Mykonos Beach Club has since closed. I know that they didn't renew the show for a second season.
But there's also that very dark video of her trying to take a refugee child away from its mother
yes.
to the hotel. Like, do you know what what happened there? I mean, I'm assuming you didn't get to talk to her about it, but I'm sure that was
yeah, that would have been, the publicist would have shot me in the head and you know,
yes.
certainly
drawn you out.
Certainly yeah. roped me and taken me away if I had asked about that. Yeah, I don't know. I just know that there was the Syrian refugee crisis really, really radicalized Lindsay in a way that I don't think any of us saw coming.
Tell me your story so I can help you. Do you want to stay in a hotel tonight? Do you want to watch movies?
You should not have them on the floor. You should be a hardworking woman. And you should be doing what you do for your children so they have a better life. And if someone's offering them a home and a bed, which is me at this moment, give it to them. Look what's happening. They're trafficking children.
The video is difficult to watch, and it ends with the mother of these children hitting Lindsay to keep her away from the kids. It's not clear what was going on with Lindsay when she started harassing these people. And all she ever really said about it was that she'd read the situation wrong and made a mistake. In any case, the beach club had failed and her time in Greece was coming to an end. It was another attempt at a comeback that had gone so completely off the rails. But Lindsay would soon try again.
This is Infamous from Campside Media.
So you may have noticed that in that strange, strange video, Lindsay was talking differently. During all her travels, she had somehow adopted a new accent.
If you've heard Lindsay Lohan speak in an interview lately, you might have noticed she doesn't sound like she used to.
This is just me holding it with me walking, going. Whereas the paparazzi may be across the street, I didn't know. And they crucified me for it in America. They made me seem like Satan.
Reference, here's how Lindsay spoke when E.T. last caught up with her in 2013.
How much fun was it to make the movie with Charlie?
It was really fun. He's a really nice guy.
Perhaps this new accent was part of Lindsay reinventing herself as an international woman, not an American child star with a troubled past. So it makes sense then that she'd move to a place that is overwhelmingly comprised of expats. Dubai. Yep, the whole time Lindsay was working and partying in Greece, her residence was actually in Dubai. Vanessa and I talked about it.
I don't even think I realized she was living in Dubai until we started working on this episode. So, Natalie, as you may know from listening to one of our other podcast episodes in this series called Dubai's Missing Princesses, Natalie grew up in Dubai. She now lives in LA. But why do you think Lindsay would move to Dubai? Like, it just seems so weird and out of left field.
Yeah, I think it definitely is from the outside. Mm-hmm. And there have been a couple images that have startled me, like seeing Lindsay Lohan pose with Dubai police on her Instagram.
Oh my God, Jesus.
Several years ago. But yeah, as I guess the, as Infamous's official Dubai correspondent, it doesn't seem that strange to me when I really think about it that Lindsay would move there. There's lots of reasons. Like one, Dubai really, really courts celebrities and kind of, I think, over the last decade plus has kind of really advertised itself as a safe haven for celebs. Not only do they invite them to take lavish trips, sometimes even giving them villas on the Palm or wherever.
Yeah. Wait, tell us about the Palm. So they basically made these like fake islands that all look like palm trees.
Right. They dredged the sea to create these totally man-made palm-shaped islands off the coast of Dubai. And there are houses on the palm fronds and sort of businesses. You can drive up the main trunk, if you will. Yeah. And there's an Atlantis resort at the end of that trunk.
Oh my God. So it's like a faux Miami, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. Faux Miami with slightly more conservative clothing. Just slightly.
Right.
But the other thing that's different to, say, a Miami, and one of the reasons why somebody like Lindsay would want to go there, is that there is no paparazzi. Mm. Privacy laws are incredibly strict.
Oh, okay.
So she's just not going to get bothered. So there is not paparazzi. Lindsay is not going to be hounded by men on motorbikes or people waiting outside.
There's nobody leaking when she at 5 a.m. is like, I want like 7 tubs of caviar to be delivered right now to my residence. Like nobody's leaking that.
Exactly. And then I think the other thing that maybe gets left out a little bit from this narrative is that there are also incredibly strict drug laws in Dubai. So for that reason, it's hard to get your hands on drugs.
Right. And nobody wants to end up in a Dubai prison, that is for sure.
No, absolutely not. So if you're somebody who has like publicly struggled with substance abuse in the past, being somewhere where you can't even get your hands on substances is probably pretty good for your health.
Right.
Writer Brennan Kilbane met Lindsay when she was very much in her Dubai era. And he talked to her about why she liked living there.
One of the things she expressed to me, which I thought was interesting, was she likes the kind of distance that it affords her from not only the American, you know, film and TV industry, but from, you know, her family, who she loves and who she loves spending time with. And most of them are in New York. But Dubai gives her a little bit of distance so she can come to New York and then she can leave, or her family can come visit her in Dubai and then they can go back to New York. And so it really, she's really carved out this, like, this space for herself there. And of course, like a very luxurious space, I assume. I think 2020 and the pandemic, as so many of us kind of approached it as a reset, it feels like Lindsay maybe did as well. She was back in Dubai, and that is kind of when she started to step into the Netflix of it all.
So that's kind of her comeback as part of this multi-picture deal.
Yes. Netflix was going to design these rom-coms around her, the first one being Falling for Christmas. Lindsay and I spoke a lot about rom-coms, and she has a lot of enthusiasm about the genre, really seemed to want to own the rom-com and was hoping to use this Netflix two-picture deal as a kind of way to get back into it.
It's all nice and well that she wants to bring back the rom-com, but these movies, they're essentially Lifetime movies. Like, that's how I would think of them. Like, this is not highbrow cinema. This is a comfort film that you put on, and it perfectly banks on Lindsay's nostalgia. This millennial nostalgia where we're all like, oh, we grew up with her and we just want the best for her. Oh, here she is. And this movie just feels like a big hug and a cozy blanket. But when we look at this holy trinity, right, of Paris Hilton, Britney Spears, Lindsay Lohan, all these infamous pictures of them falling out of cars and that era of tabloid, both Paris and Britney have really had a swing back into public favor, where there's a lot more goodwill towards both of them. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously there's the whole Free Britney movement. Paris had her documentary. I really feel like they've been able to rebuild their image and be embraced by the public, but I don't know that Lindsay has managed to do that. Like, what do you think about that? And if do you agree? And if she hasn't been, like, why do you think that is?
I do agree. And yeah, why is it? I wonder if it is because of the distance she's put between her and us, which we deserve, by the way. We are not owed any more Lindsay Lohan as a peoples, but I wonder if by comparison, definitely Paris, I think even Britney still feel a little bit more accessible to us because they're always on social media. We see Paris thriving and we like that. And it's interesting to think about now that Lindsay is in this new chapter of her life. She's a new mother. I'm sure that that has radically changed her worldview and right. It's going to continue to. But it's almost like she's shown us everything, but has she shown us enough? Do we feel like we know the real Lindsay? Do we feel like she's right. A real person still in our heads? Like, she is a lot more inaccessible to us now.
Yeah, she's in Dubai.
Yeah, exactly. She's so far away and we don't know what's going on with her. We don't know what's going on with her life. And I think she likes it that way. I think that she is extremely guarded, as she should be. And I wonder if she can continue to be guarded while cultivating her fan base.
It really seems like Lindsay has long been the little girl lost. An archetype that doesn't really work when you're in your late 30s. And in some ways, she's a celebrity of a bygone era. With a controlling publicist, a sanitized social media presence, one not really fit for content creation and constant oversharing. Whether Lindsay, the little girl lost, can find her way to a Lohanissance in this new field of fame remains to be seen.
And that's all true. But I would also say that more recently, we really are seeing Lindsay blossom. She looks very sober on her press tour for her new rom-com, Irish Wish. And honestly, it looks like she's calmed down, like injections and stuff like that that she might have been having done. She's running all over the place, saying that a redo of Freaky Friday has been approved by the movie studio that, you know, did the first one. And this may or may not be true, but it's very canny. She's like putting pressure on studio bosses to make that movie happen. She's got a baby. I mean, Lindsay's doing pretty well. And we're all pulling for her, that's for sure. So
So everyone, thanks so much for listening to Infamous. And I wanted to let you know that we set up an email for any thoughts or tips or concerns you have about the show. If you just want to reach out to say hi, pretty much anything. It's infamous@campsidemedia.com. Again, that's infamous@campsidemedia.com. CAMPSIDE, not campsite. We look forward to hearing from you. And next time on Infamous, we will be taking on a story that we have been waiting to do for a very long time. Check out these clips and check us out next week.
You hear that? That is the sound of hearts breaking all around the world. It is reported that Prince Harry is dating actress Meghan Markle.
The world's most eligible bachelor.
That new transatlantic alliance.
So I don't ever remember personally feeling the negative connotation behind the word ambitious until I started dating my now husband.
I don't bully my sister. I love my sister. My very first interview, I said she's a combination of Condoleezza Rice and Lady Diana.
Surely, I said, Paul will do something.
I've advocated for so long for women to use their voice, and then I was silent.
Were you silent or were you silenced?
The latter.